So.
My sermon was right there. Somebody doesn't want me to preach. I have plan B. We're good. Well, good morning to you all. I hope your Lent is going well. We're almost halfway there, right? If you haven't started yet, today's the day, right? We still got actually almost 4 weeks of Lent left, a good time and enough time to do some serious spiritual work. This year, in our B cycle of readings, we've been looking at the covenants in our first readings. That's the one. Yeah. In looking at covenants, we started with Noah and the covenant between God and Noah and his family. Last week, we looked at Abraham and the covenant established on the mountain with Abraham and his descendants. Today, we have the reading is the Ten Commandments. And that, of course, alludes to the covenant established on the mountain with Moses and the Hebrew people. As we look at the Ten Commandments, there is an a danger, I guess, in the sense of misunderstanding what they mean and what they meant in this covenant. If we're looking at covenant in our own times, we don't use that word a lot. And so it's a little difficult to grasp what a covenant really is. The best example and lived example we have today is the covenant of marriage, the sacrament of marriage, right? That's where we learn what it's about. And again, if we go back then to this listing of the Ten Commandments, what would happen to a couple in marriage if they said, well, what's the law here? What do I have to do? We wouldn't even call that marriage in our Catholic tradition, right? It in that sense, the law is a sense, a kind of minimalizing. What do I have to do? Covenants are about relationships. That's what they are about. Going back to Noah, God says, you know, not only will I not destroy the earth again, but I will give you everything you need to prosper. That's covenant. On the mountain, God says to Abraham, your descendants will be as many as the sands on the seashore. And Abraham offers back to God that which is his most precious possession, his son. That's covenant. So what about today? Looking at this, where God says, I will be your God and you will be my people. And so the Ten Commandments need to be put into their proper perspective. That is to say, Israel had just experienced the Exodus, coming out of slavery. And they are at the mountain, and God gives to them the Ten Commandments. God gives them this covenant through Moses. Not something they're going to do in order to earn God's favor. That's another fallacy when it comes to the commandments. Like, I'll be good and God will love me. You know, that's conditional love. And that's not covenant love. Covenant love is unconditional love. You who are married know how that is true and also how difficult it can be. We are called to love unconditionally as God loves us. All we can really do then is to respond to what God has already done for us and what God continues to do for us. And Israel knew this, and so the Ten Commandments were treasured in part because they gave them an opportunity to say thank you. It was something they could do for God, was to obey the commandments. But also, they recognized that the commandments were a treasure that they had. They were wisdom on how to live and how to love and how to prosper. A reminder here that the Torah, those first books of the Old Testament, were handed down for thousands of generations through oral tradition before they ever got written down. In other words, thousands of generations of families, of couples trying to learn what love is and how to learn in love in dialogue with God have produced what we call the Hebrew Scriptures. And so they were wisdom that the people treasured. You'll recall that elsewhere in the Old Testament, they say, what other people have a law like we have, right? It was something precious for them. The law then for them is not a rigid set of principles, but rather a collective directive born out of human experience, out of human life, kind of a codified wisdom, and therefore cherished by the Hebrew people and ought to be cherished by us as well. There is so much wisdom to be found in the scriptures, so much wisdom to be found even in the law that is found in the scriptures and in our church. In our response psalm, we said today, the law of the Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. The decree of the Lord is trustworthy, giving wisdom to the simple. That was Israel's relationship with the law and why they treasured it. Now, last week on the mountain, we saw the transfiguration where Jesus was talking with Moses, the law, and Elijah the prophet. And then it says they were gone and Jesus stood there alone. And we saw that that meant that Jesus is now this wisdom from God. Jesus is where we find the wisdom that has been imparted to us and continues to do so. We can still hear the Father's voice saying, this is my Son, listen to him. Paul tells us today, we proclaim Christ crucified, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. And so we look to him. We look to him for wisdom on how to live, on how to love, and how to give thanks to God, and how to fulfill the covenant of loving God and loving our neighbor. So we come here today loved and to respond to God's love for us, not to earn it. Eucharist is our expression of gratitude to God. The very word Eucharist, as you know, means thanksgiving. The terms here are not the Ten Commandments, but the two. Love God and love each other. In truth, they're but one commandment, because the way we love God is to love our neighbor, to love as God loves us, unconditionally, the way we learn of God's love through Christ. And so in our gospel today, we're a bit intrigued when we see Jesus angry. Why was he so mad? He accused the merchants of making the temple into a marketplace. But a part of it really was a marketplace. I mean, it was necessary for the people, before they could make a contribution to the temple, to exchange that pagan coin that had Caesar's image on it for a Hebrew coin that did not. It was necessary for them to purchase animals for the sacrifice that took place in the temple. All this was legitimate. On one level, Jesus was following the prophets in decrying the obeying of laws and rituals as an end in themselves, represented by the coins and the animals. That is, in place of the relationships of covenant life and covenant love, they were simply doing prayers, obeying commandments, going to church. I think this is something that we could spend a great deal of time reflecting upon in our Lenten journey as well. The goal here is not to be obedient to laws, but to be led into the kind of love that we experience from God, the kind of love expressed by the crucifix that is always before us. Now, we're beginning to read from John's Gospel, and we will read from John throughout the next several months, actually. And we know that in John's Gospel, there are many layers of meaning. So the temple that Jesus says he will destroy, or they will destroy and rebuild, we know historically that actually happened in 70 AD. But the temple is not only the place where the people went to worship and to offer sacrifice. It is, for them, the dwelling place of God. That is, the Holy of Holies in the center of the temple was where God dwelt. And they came to see and to be with God. And now Jesus says, this center point of the universe, this seventh center point of history, is Jesus himself. We encounter God through him. He is not only the wisdom, he is God himself. And we have an opportunity through him to express our love for God, the Father, and also to learn from him about the love that we experience from God and that we should be sharing in an experience of covenant with our brothers and sisters. Toward the end of the gospel reading, the wisdom of God is contrasted to human wisdom. Human nature, we are told, he understood well. Interesting line there. We might say it is our nature to not love unconditionally. It is our nature to follow our own wisdom, our own judgments, and to seek what we want. Even in prayer, it is our nature to spend most of our time telling God what we want or telling God what to do, rather than seeking God's wisdom, following God's ways, and allowing God to direct our lives. The way of God, the wisdom of God, has been laid out before us, beautifully and powerfully present through his Son. And today, to us, through the Gospels and through the lived faith of the Church, let us seek that wisdom. Let us work to be open to that wisdom. Let us follow his way and give thanks. Let us then proclaim that God, for whose love